Tuesday the 11th, we got the tax bills workshop and so on. You can see what's here. You know, this flows to some extent on exchanges we've had, and also some things that occurred to the chair, obviously, that seem reasonably consistent with what's expected and what discussion. The MTBPS cycle, as you know, is not in our hands. It's in the Money Bills Act as set out, though we are going to change that. Now, the only other issue is, you see, we got Wednesday the 2 issues. Wednesday the 30th of November, we have an SAA follow-up meeting. And having heard the members today, it strikes me that it's reasonable maybe to bring it forward to, say, Wednesday the 16th of November. I'm wrong about dates. I would have only said after the MTBPS. It's not my decision. The MTBPS ends on Tuesday the 8th of November, right? Is that right? Alan, can you help? And then we have to vote on the tax bills, right? So it's Tuesday the 15th. We've spoken to I would say Wednesday the 16th. We'll bring it forward 2 weeks as I suggested earlier. Okay, shall we do that? 16th, right? So that's the one change. And secondly, I got a letter from Mr. Mania yesterday basically saying that you will recall that he raised the issue of a senior official of SARS being investigated. And then the commissioner replied that, look, these things are confidential and something like, I can remember that. And we checked with Advocate Jenkins, or he would have said something, or by not saying something, implied that the commissioner was free to say the law doesn't allow me to reply. At that stage, as the chair of the committee, and I don't think anybody, I didn't know who he was referring to. But then it's now in the Sunday Times 2 weekends ago, and now it's in the public domain, that it's actually the, if you like, to use one of his senior officials, who was actually sitting next to him, I think, on that day. And I would like to speak to Advocate Jenkins outside this meeting. I think to avoid these sort of situations, what we might want to do is what happens in the House, right? Where a member can raise a question and say, I would like a response to the matter of a certain person identified to the minister. So I don't know, Advocate Jenkins, if we have such a process. So we could have adjourned and then said to Commissioner Moyane, this is the name, and then he would have come back and explained. So basically what I'm saying is that I have spoken to the Treasury, and they said that, I spoke to Advocate Jenkins, and he says, yes, we can call in the FIC, and because the Commissioner has gone on record now as saying, I think he's, I'm not sure, I haven't been following all the articles, but as I understand it, I think he's saying, in response to questions of why did he not act sooner, that he wasn't getting the cooperation of the FIC. So Mr. Mania is saying, well, why don't we call them here to discuss the issue of their cooperation, not the specific matter which the committee has no right to do. So I asked Advocate Jenkins for advice, and in a nutshell he says, yes, the committee can call the FIC and SARS and ask them to cooperate. That's our oversight role. But you see, there's both executive oversight and parliamentary oversight. And I spoke to Mr. Mania and told him that I think that this matter should be given some space and time with the executive. They're attending to it. But more importantly, we are, in any case, as you'll see from the program, on the second day of our sitting, when we come back, having the annual report of the Treasury, which means the DG will be here, and SARS, and it's the whole day, but we'll also look at the Twin Peaks bill. We can call the FIC at that stage if it's relevant. So that's broadly what I'm saying to Mr. Mania is speak to the DM, which I did with him, and then I had to leave for the AG's meeting, to say basically that, look, I don't think anybody's got an issue with this matter. We can look at it on the 12th of October, because that's the next sitting week of the House, of the committee. And there's no party political issue here. The commissioner will have to respond to the issues that are in the public domain anyway. So do you really want to meet this week? He wants it this week and so on. But let him speak for himself, then we'll have more proceeding.
Thank you, Chair. I think you've summarized the...
Yeah, what's the point of what? Who? Sorry? Very good point, Makosi. It's the best thing you said for weeks. Yeah. No, I entirely agree with Makosi. You see, now she's got a PhD, and the rest of us don't. Professor Topham, I can see I'll confer another PhD on you for your astute and insightful comments. Right. That's a good one. Okay. Right. Okay. Right. Over to you, Mr. Mayor. You have to speak. I mean, there's no conspiracy here. Don't give us a hard time. Right? What's going to happen? We're going to hold them here on when? Who's going to be here on Thursday? I don't know. We're trying to finish tomorrow. Right. Okay. Have your say, then you can report to your party that you did.
Thank you, Chair. You accurately summarise the events. I think there's an agreement that we obviously need to, A, deal with this matter, that when we deal with the matter, we need the Commissioner of SARS present and we need the Director of the FIC present. Your argument, I think, that the Executive needs time to deal with this is probably, in this case, not quite valid because the at least on the information publicly available, the Minister has already met the Commissioner of SARS and dealt with this matter. What we need is urgent assurance that the matter is being investigated by the relevant authority, in this case, in my view, the SAPS, and we need an explanation as to how we got into this situation. And I think it's a matter of urgent public interest, and for that reason I would argue that the meeting should be scheduled on Thursday or Friday. Just to be clear, I believe that what we need to deal with is coordination and process. We obviously can't deal with the merits of the allegations. That must be subject to a proper investigation by the competent authority.
Sipiso?
Chair, wouldn't we get this from the minister responsible for the twin organization that is being dealt with and so on? I think we and let's take it from there. I think we sort of jumping the gun. We go in there and I think I've heard the minister saying that he's on top of it and so on. And if we could just get assurance from the minister that he's dealing with it, rather than us all coming here and convening. When they come here, we'll ask the question. So I would urge my colleagues to say let's give it. I don't think there is a train smash. The minister is on top of it from what we heard.
Anybody else? Let other people speak, then we'll give you a chance to reply. Nobody else has a view. Can you say what you think? Because I need to be guided by the majority, so if you don't say anything, then I must go by what I hear. Sorry? All right, so you're agreeing with Buthelezi, right? Anybody got a different view apart from Mr. Mania? No. Mr. Lees. Supporting Mr. Mania. Well, yeah, you don't have to, but you can. That's your right, presumably. Fine. Mr. Mania.
Chair, the first claim is that we should not have an urgent meeting because this has not been dealt or the executive needs time to deal with it. I've made an argument. The executive has, in fact, met Tom Moyane and dealt with it. The second issue, second argument by my colleague, is that the minister is on top of it. I'm frankly not convinced that the minister is on top of it because immediately or shortly after the minister's meeting, the Commissioner of SARS issued a statement where he alleged that the delay was in fact the fault of the FIC, and if you read the statement carefully, implies that the minister is somehow responsible for that. So I'm not convinced at all that the minister, I regret to say, is on top of this matter. That's why I think we need to act and hold both the FIC and SARS accountable. Somebody needs to start explaining what the hell is going on.
Tunde, Chair, forgive me because I caught the matter to the tail end because I was busy something. When matters of this nature appear in the public discourse, we process them with the sensitivities that they deserve, right? Because what we want to do is to get to the bottom of the facts. Now, the first thing that you do is to give the parties the benefit of doubt to deal with the matter, and by the time you request the report, they will have applied their mind. So, David should understand, we're not saying this matter must not come here. We say, let's give the minister and whoever concerned the opportunity to address this matter, because relying on media statements itself is not sufficient for us to take this post that is taking for now. So, Chair, we leave it to you to process it the right way.
Can I just say, firstly, Mr. Mania, you're introducing something new altogether, which means it's a long discussion. You're saying something else. You're not saying that you... That's okay, it's your right to say you're not convinced the minister has any further role. That Tom Moyane has put this issue in the agenda by going into the public domain, which is a good point, actually. I mean, I also realized, by the way, I anticipated somebody's going to raise it. But you see, you say something new now. You're saying that the matter should be referred to the SAPS. As I understand it, I don't know if Advocate Jenkins can help us. Strictly speaking, the FIC refers the matter to SARS to say, can you get some sort of response? That's your senior member. And then the decision is taken to take it to SAPS. I don't know, Advocate Jenkins, who decides. Who takes it to SAPS? Is it SARS or FIC or both? I don't know that. So you're introducing a new element. Now, there's a long discussion. I think leave that aspect out because that's too complicated. What I think is a simple thing here. Let's agree, from what I hear people say, that we all agree this is a major issue to deal with. Point one. Point two is, I'm saying to you that as a chair, I will consult with Advocate Jenkins outside this meeting and find a way to deal with this issue in the future without exposing any individual. Thirdly, some of us may argue and some of us may not. It's not a party political thing. That maybe Mr. Commissioner should have handled the thing slightly differently. Four, what I could do if the committee so agrees as a compromise is write to the minister, the commissioner, and is it Ms. Murray Mitchell? Hey, Murray Mitchell, is that right? This guy has got former struggle history, right? This is the guy. He's a former activist. Yeah. So people should guard against having theories that if you don't know somebody, you know, they're serving some conspiracy. This guy is a struggle activist for what it's worth. For what it's worth, I stress. So what I'm saying is, why don't I write a letter to Gordon Mitchell, is it? And Michelle. That's a female name, Michelle. Oh, right. Okay, is that French or what? Never mind. I write to them and say, look, we're unhappy. We want some assurances, cooperation. We expect you here on the, what is it, the 12th. What's the problem with that now? Can I suggest that as a compromise, Tandy? I know you're talking to your children and grandchildren. That's important, so let's move on. Anybody got anything to say? Yes, Mr. Mania. It's not a big issue, really.
There's agreement that it's important. There's agreement that there should be a hearing. There's disagreement about when. If it's the majority's view that the hearing should be on the 12th, then that is the view, and that is the view that we'll go with. I would just request that if the meeting does go ahead, that the FIC must be present.
The 12th. No, we agree on that. We're not afraid of the FIC. Right. Now, can you tell us what is the content of your media statement that you issued at 5:30 this morning?
Yeah.
So that, you know, I don't get harassment. I don't have a media officer and a researcher and all that.
Yeah.
What you said in your media statement? That the committee bludgeoned you and denied you the right to have a say, and it's draconian, and the chairperson is a Stalinist. What else you said?
A warlord. If I do put out a statement, it'll be... it will be simply to welcome the fact that there will be a hearing on the 12th.
That's too soft for Steynesians. Too soft for Steynesians. Your chances of promotion, succeeding, what's his name, Musi, have been dramatically reduced. Okay, you know, I need a life, okay? I need a life. Really. I went from here to the Auditor General, which I want to make the point of. Really, I've told the Auditor General's office, it's not acceptable to just brief me. They gave a very good document. Let me tell you what a committee secretary said about us collectively. I asked this committee, so can you email it to the members? And the committee secretary, listen to this, Makosi, it won't apply to you, was aghast. Is that the word, aghast? I don't know how you pronounce it. You mean I must send it now for the 12th of October, Chairperson? If I send it now, they will not even read it, and they'll lose it. And then I'll have to make another copy for them on the 12th. That is the impression the staff have for us. Never mind that we got the latest snazzy iPhone and MacBook Air and iPad. Fine. So, you know what? Do your job, my friend. Give it to them. And we're not printing it again. There ain't any money, and the environment's destroying our grandchildren's prospects. Not that I have a grandchild yet, regrettably. I'd like the committee to discuss that matter. My daughter, Makosi, knows he's 28, you know, and I'm gender sensitive, but, you know, I'm getting on now. I need a life beyond this board, beyond this. Right? Fine. Let's do this. We agree with this thing. Mr. Mania, for once, can you note this minute taker? I start with this. Mr. Mania, for the first time in his life, was conciliatory. And we were so traumatized, we had to go for counseling. Right. So, colleagues, we agreed to switch SAA, right? Bring it forward. And then we'll sequentially rearrange that. No, I switched the thing off. Oh, right. Yeah, there's not many committees. I should behave, yeah. I won't tell you that anecdote. Momo, you'll be interested. The property rates bill. Okay, I'll tell you because it... No, let me switch. say. Right, here we are. We're agreeing on this program. Let's move on. Right, financial sector regulation bill. I did on Sunday, Mr. Mania, I also don't have a life like you, send you the approach, right, to the day. What we are suggesting, colleagues, unless you've got a better approach, is we review chapter 11, 12, it'll be very fast, right? Because we went further than ahead, and then I promised I will read. But then I promised also to deliver the themes, which I did on Friday. But when I looked at the clauses carefully, I realized, Kathy, it'll take me too long to explain everything. But because we've already informally adopted them, I'll only focus on the ones that myself and anybody else who wants to come in can raise, right? Then we think two, let's call it the Kathy clauses, right? The ones that we ask you to rework, but you didn't bring back to us. Then we look at the themes. Then we go through the schedules. It's going to be riveting, let me warn you, Marcosian, riveting going through those schedules. I tried to do that last night. We must do all the above by 4:45 tomorrow. Failing which, I regret to say, we are meeting on Thursday. There is another clever option I thought about, Sifiso. Notice 6B, you are subcommittee chair. We could break up into a subcommittee to look at the schedules. I would like to suggest that I do not think it's appropriate that every member needs to sit here. So as long as the subcommittee implies, Sifiso will chair, I'll be there. Any member can come, but at least one DA and two ANC. So it doesn't stop anybody else from being there. That's an option for Thursday. I know Tandi's not around on Thursday for family reasons. Then the schedules, that's 6A. 6B, what we want to do, colleagues, is do work during the constituency period. The technical work, look at all the amendments, the cross-referencing and so on. That's not something you need to preoccupy a chairperson. And then we come back with version 3 of the bill on the 7th of October. We send it out immediately. You will put it on your website, Momo, you said. But it's in Parliament's hands, so yourself and Teboho will have to send it out to all the stakeholders and ask them to make written representations by the 14th. We're not going to have public hearings or anything, even if you pay us, no. The committee will then hopefully vote reasonably soon thereafter. I'm quite optimistic that we will vote on it this quarter, and I think we should sit, if we have to, through the plenary sessions. And then I have some very good news for you. If you deliver on this, National Treasury has agreed, because it saves so much of money through its cost containment exercises, thanks to the pressure we've been putting on it, so you get a commission in return, see? If you put pressure on the department, and then they put pressure on all the entities and departments and save money, we get a commission, right? And that commission means we are having a one-week holiday in the summer in Mongolia. Is that right? Can you confirm that more, and can you minute it before we continue? Right. So over to you, colleagues. Do you have any other ideas on how? Look, on a more serious note, these are just ideas. If you have a better, more efficient system, I'm cool. I really would like one that's faster, but also vigorous. Can I have from the members person? I'll come to you, Momo. You resigned as a member in 1994, okay? I don't want to go to Alaska, but fine. Anything else? Nope, good, we're agreeing on the process. Let's start. Right, let colleagues turn to chapter 11. I'd be looking at the same version of July. Oh, so you want to say something?
I was going to say, if you don't mind, if you could do the schedules after we do the 11, 12, 13, because the other stuff we do need to do some preparation for that.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay, that's okay. That's fine. We can start on the schedules. Right, let's go to chapter... What page is it, Kathy? Oh, dear. I know you sent me the separate one, but I had already looked at this on Friday. So can we start with the version 2 and then you'll compare it? I'm sorry about this, but... Right. On chapter 11, which Tandi started, and then because she wasn't feeling up to it, didn't finish. I'm not complaining. She did a very good job. I must thank her once again. Okay, so very quickly, she's gone to issue his press statement. What's his name? You see? Mr. Topham? Your leader. He's gone to issue his press statement. She's gone. Right, he didn't ask permission from the chair, which is very rude, but that's fine. Can I get something clear? You see, 157.1, right? That is linked to the other criteria for what is a significant owner. Otherwise, to influence materially the business strategy of the financial institution, that could be an advisor or an individual, right? But such a person wouldn't qualify as a significant owner unless he or she also meets the other criteria. Am I correct?
Not completely, Chair. The idea is that actually Section 2 sort of, so it says without limiting subsection 1, but it gives you much clearer guidance in terms of what the criteria would be. So you do raise an interesting point, is that they, and this is, I guess, the approach we generally take in law, is that we draft broad and allow for narrowing later. So there is a section which actually allows you to apply to the regulator and ask them that you're not a significant owner, just in case you accidentally get caught up here. Otherwise, we draft too narrow, and then, you know, so we kind of do it a little bit back the other way around.
There's a simpler way to do it. In the very legislation this government of ours has brought to us previously, which is to link all the criteria in one clause with sub-clause. So it's clear that one is linked to sub two and the subsections there, but at this stage, colleagues, I don't want to fight about it. If I had my own way, I would just simplify it, really. Because, am I correct to say, somebody who influences material, are we looking at 157.1, comrades? Somebody who influences material, the business strategy of the financial institution, that could be an advisor. That could be some technical expert. But fine, let's not kill each other. I've done my job. Nobody's picking up on it. Antonio, Advocate Jenkins, you want to say anything? Right, leave it. Fine. Yeah.
I think what the intention of that clause is, I mean, yes, I mean, as a legal advisor, I can influence a decision of Parliament, but I can't be held accountable for that. I mean, I just give legal advice. I can be held accountable if my advice is correct or not, but the decision that's taken, is the responsibility of the person who takes it, whoever they got advice from. And a significant owner, I think, must be seen like that, to say you actually have that ability to take a decision, but then the 15% shareholding is an interesting thing to think of, because how do you, if you only have that 15%, unless you're Oppenheimer, then you're not going to be influencing a business decision of the company. But I don't think...
Okay, fine, I would draw it, although I'm not happy personally, but look, at this late stage, it's a matter of, you know, have easier flow and greater clarity, but hey, you know what? It's not about the elegance of the bill at this stage. Okay, then you make this thing. You have a strange way, although it's a very good bill. Let me just tell you, it's not as nicely done as sometimes when I think of... You have this new technique you seem to... You come out of the kilter, right? 5 years I haven't been around processing bills. I was on the other side where, you know, I did have a hand in bills, but it was more the style that I was familiar with. If you look at your bill, in various parts, what you seem to be doing is exactly what Roy is saying, and yet that's not the only option. You're right in setting out conceptually, but the way you write, for example, look, you'll say, in 157.1A or B, you're saying, or is it C? Is it D, right? So it's D now, or is it C? I can't remember. You say, a qualifying stake in the financial institution, right? The obvious question is, what percentage? And then we turn over the page and find out you're talking about 15%. You can't tell me there's something germane to legal drafting that requires you to do it like this. Consistently, what one finds is, if you look at my own notes, you will find, I ask a question, and then it's several sub-paragraphs down that you are actually answering that question. This is a new style of drafting, Momo. You really should improve your draft. Look, it's beautifully written at times. It's beautiful to read, right? But at other times, hey, and also, but getting to be clear now, it's quite an uneven bill, as if several different hands drafted different parts. There isn't that flow of the systems bill. Why are you laughing? I am serious.
You have put your finger on the issue, like, that certain parts are drafted by different drafters.
Look, I also want to tell colleagues who are not here, I had the privilege of working with somebody like Gerard Provia. He writes, beautifully, Why are you laughing? He's drafted a lot of the constitution. Herod is really good. I spent hours trying to persuade Herod to teach the new emerging drafters. And it's interesting. He said to me, he said, Eunuch, I am not like you. I'm not a teacher. I can't teach anybody else. You're a lecturer and all that previous stuff. Myself, I can do things. But if you ask me why I do it, I don't really know. I go by instinct. So, we had him for a while in Kokta. He drafts very beautifully. I mean, look at the constitution. I must tell you, colleagues, you look at our constitution. It's beautifully clearly written. It's a remarkable document, really. You look at other constitutions, you won't see this quality of drafting. There are a lot of different hands, but somebody finally wrote it who was the same person. It's beautifully written. But fine, you've got this irritating, not very user-friendly technique. Hopefully when you come with your 1,000 bills thereafter, whether I'm here or not is irrelevant. It's nicer to write simply. All right, anybody else got anything on 157, 1 and 2? Nope? Fine. The other financial regulator refers to whether it's a conduct authority or the right. Okay, right. Then there's a small grammatical thing. I don't know if I'm right. You're missing an A. Let's see. I don't know where the A is missing. Before finance dictable. All right, fine. Let me drop that. Anything else on 157, colleagues? No. 158, I got nothing. Anybody got anything on 158? Antonia, Anthony, Frank? No. Right. 159. What's the word illegible here? Just remind me. You answered this before quickly. An illegible institution, finance?
Bank or insurer.
Oh, yeah, fine. Okay, good. Under 4, is the subsection correct? It's the whole, it's A and B. Shouldn't you put in, Janine, under 4A, shouldn't you say subsection 2A, and then under 4B, subsection 2B? So you're referring to the precise subsections. That's how you normally do it. Am I correct or wrong?
We could certainly do that. That is,
we normally do that. Precise. Not we could, yeah. Don't we normally do that? You've done it elsewhere in the book.
It is good to,
yeah,
to
let's
be
just
precise.
Do it consistently. Thank you very much.
Certainly.
Right. Then on 6, you see subsections 2, 3, and 4 do not apply to a person who's detained in terms of section 157. And I got 154 here. Is the cross-reference right? You'll check it out later, right? It might be 154, but hey, there's no time to look at it now. Fine. Anything else, colleagues? Can we go on to 160? You say standards in respect of and regulators directives. Shouldn't it be directives? Two. Janine, can you look that up later? Eh? Or is it directive? Can you look that up later? Don't have detail in the meeting. You've been alerted to it, right? Now, in 161A, I don't know, colleagues, just look at that. It says personal character qualities of honesty and integrity. Why didn't you say honesty and qualities of honesty and integrity? It's obvious it's personal character qualities. Do you need personal character then? Fine. Can you think about it and decide? It's not the end of the world. Then the next one is... Look at 3A, right? Is it cease or ceases to be a significant owner of a financial institution? Can you look at that later, please, Jenny? Okay, next thing, 161, any comments, please? Nope. Sub 4 of 2, no, sorry, sub 4 of 161. Why? The prudential authority must consult the conduct authority in connection with any designation. In terms of subsection, why is that?
Just to ensure that the Financial Conduct Authority is aware of the designation. In that sense, yeah.
You're really informing them, not consulting them.
Well, you have to check with them. I think
fine.
We try to encourage the two of them to talk to each other.
Yeah, so in that sense, it's urging that cooperation chapter, right? Okay. 162, any questions? Comments? Okay, 163. Yes, please.
Just a query on this. So effectively we're saying, let's use an example, Outsurance Limited. Going to be licensed, and they say Outsurance Holdings above it. You do that to have the same license as the insurance, and or if it was a banking, does that mean double fees, etc., etc.?
Chair, the license that's envisaged for the holding company is a much lighter license than a full banking license, because they won't be doing the business of, well, in the Outsurance case, a very good example. In the Outsurance case, the holding company won't necessarily be doing the business of an insurer. So they'll probably fall under the licensing requirements in this board. So it's basically just a simple, straightforward license. But unless anyone from the insurance people want to explain exactly what the Outsurance holding company license would look like.
So I think there's different layers of supervision. So the solo entity supervision, and then insurance group supervision or banking group supervision, where most of the entities in that group is either banks or if it's an insurance group. And then you want to look at the whole package of all the entities. So a financial conglomerate would typically be where there's a bank, an insurer, etc. in it. So you will supervise a solo entity from an insurance perspective, but you do want to look at sort of conflict of interest, how interrelated are they, how is liquidity managed in respect of the group. So it is sort of, it's a very different type of supervision. And if you look at a number of difficulties experienced internationally, specifically in respect of the group and how the various groups influence each other. But Donati, do you want to?
I mean, so if you look at subsection 3, it actually makes it clear. So you're actually requiring that holding company to be licensed because you're interested in your responsibilities with regards to the eligible financial institutions that fall thereunder. So what you actually want is you want some of the requirements that you want your eligible financial institutions to be complying with, to have at least the understanding of the holding company. And in addition, the entire regime of financial conglomerate supervision is about some of the risks posed to the eligible financial institutions from other financial institutions that are not regulated but held by the same holding company. So if that holding company has no requirement in itself, then you might not be able to achieve some of the objectives that you actually want around financial institutions in the same group that are not required to be licensed. So the holding company is the best sort of gate into the group.
Okay, Mr. Tubman.
Sorry, I just quickly refer to, I think, the sections around 112, 125, all about licenses. Okay, just looking very quickly again. I don't see different category of licenses or a holding company type of category. So I understand what you're trying to achieve. That's great. So let's take First Rand. First Rand's got a bank. RMB's got a bank, and they've got insurance divisions, etc. What license would the holding company require? A banking license and an insurance? I less a thing. Wouldn't it be better just to say that nobody can become a significant owner without the written consent, right? So couldn't that written consent be granted on condition that the holding company, for instance, agrees to the following, But I think by making them a licensee, it just seems like they've got to comply with all the requirements of that subsidiary. And if there is such a separate, specific holding company type of a license, that's so be it. But it doesn't make sense to me to make the holding company a licensed entity.
Yes?
The license obviously will say what the requirements on the holding company are, so I don't think there'll be any confusion, definitely, to the holding company why they are being licensed. So the fact that you're required to license them here, this is a legal requirement for them to be able to notify you and for you to say, here's a license, and in terms of this license, here's what we require from you. The bank controlling company requirement, for example, I mean, you need to license the bank controlling company, but you won't have the same requirements all the time on both the bank and the bank controlling company. But the license will make it clear. I don't think that any there'll be a confusion about what the requirements are. It's just a requirement to be licensed so that the license can say why we want you to be licensed. What are the conditions? What are the requirements?
You're not happy, but I think it's fine for now. Okay, can we move on to 164? What's a non-operating company?
It's just a company that doesn't do, it's a weird thing to say, but it doesn't actually do any operations. So it's kind of a holding company, in that it just is sort of a shell company that holds interest in shares. Maybe the
something earlier, yeah, you covered earlier.
No, I think I'll engage with Mr. Topham if
yeah,
you speak
fine,
to explain that.
Fine.
But just on the non-operating holding company, it is basically an entity that its primary business is to hold other entities. And the reason why we would want to, in certain instances, say that the holding company must be non-operating is that we've seen a number of examples where the holding company is, for instance, a bank, and it holds a number of asset managers, or owns asset managers, insurers, that they sort of start losing focus.
Okay, thank you very much. 166, anybody? This is a straightforward one, Janine. I think it's a grammatical one, right? Sub 2. Requirements that a directive contemplates subsection 1 may impose include requirements. I think you want to drop impose, right? Or you want to drop include. It's repetitive. Am I correct? That's a straightforward one.
I think we could just say a directive may impose requirements.
Right, fine.
Just
okay,
to
take out include. Yep. Thank you. 167, any questions, please? Nope. Good, right. We're fine. Then we go to... We've done. Now, you say you've made some changes, right? And there's a later version which you sent to us, I admit. But I've done this by Friday afternoon. And we got this, I don't know when, Monday morning. Too late to go back. So can you tell us what you've done now?
No, there were no additional changes. It was just you had requested to send an extract of the chapter.
The changes you
so that
made.
Was so that
oh,
was, there were no
right,
new changes.
Right.
It was just
all right, fine.
Strictly
in that case,
a document
in that
just
case,
had
I'm covered by having done
chapter.
What I did, except it's a different format to it, right? Right, good. So we're done with that. Then the next thing is clauses 270 to 290. This will go fast. There are one or two things you've done, colleagues, but just be careful about it. I don't know what it actually means. And we must get into trouble now, but we pass things and then we don't realize the implications of them. All right, so let's go to 270 quickly. Right, general matters, right? 270, anything? 271, that's civil action you take, right? Is that right, Jenny? Good, that can be done, right? So people account for being wrong and account to those whom they've wronged. Good, right. 272, that's straightforward. Any questions? 273, what does 273 sub 3 mean? Simply, please.
I think the intention is to say that there could be a suspension or cancellation of a license, and when that's done, it may be suspended or cancelled subject to certain additional conditions being imposed by the regulator. And sub 3 is just saying if one of those additional conditions happened to be violated by the licensee, that wouldn't affect the validity of the license having been cancelled or suspended.
Right.
Yes.
Fine. 274, 275, 276, 277, 278, 279, 280. What does 283 mean, sub 3? Why is that there?
The section does not require publication of a draft of a document yet. It has come to our attention in previous laws, the Financial Markets Act, that every single time we put out a draft of something, we have to gazette it. It's how some lawyers interpret the law, and we think that's just unnecessary. So all we're just trying to say is, listen, you don't have to I don't have to put drafts on in the register.
Makes sense to me. Any comments? Nope. Good. Right. Let's move on. Regulations and guidelines. Now, Janine, will you check under 281 sub 3? You've got sections 49, 72, 194, 227. You've covered them all, right? I see here draft of the regulation under 4, which I think is good. What's very good is what you've got, the whole process. It's very consultative. I really must congratulate. This is how government should operate, frankly. Engage with industry, civil society, and consult, consult, consult. It must just be nominal, okay? It's very good, I think, for what it's worth, sub B, under, what is it, 4. Very good. Now, the period allowed, you say, under 5B, for Parliament scrutiny referred to in paragraph 4B, must be at least 30 days while Parliament is in session. Fine. Now, if we do nothing, what happens? Roy, what happens if we do nothing under 5B? Parliament.
If you do nothing, well, then you do nothing. It's really up to you. And I think what we indicated is that we're going to align this with the standard making section, which we have made changes. So you asked us to change the word scrutiny, and we will change it to be identical in this section.
But basically, if you do nothing, you go ahead. Yeah, okay, you're right. What can we do? I hope people realize that we're asking for consultation all the time to have the capacity to do it. But nevertheless, hopefully, in 100 years from now, Parliament will give us the capacity we need. So I'm quite optimistic.
And Chair, as we indicated, we have this clause in the Credit Rating Services Act and the...
Yeah, I know, but I just think that this thing that, you know, we just don't have...
Let's try it.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Okay, what can we do? Right, then let's go on to 9. Look, I'll forego my question there. It's very controversial. Let's leave it at this stage. Okay, we're done then with that part. Let's go to part 6. I don't see anything else on the 14 and 15, right? Okay, you're given the interpretations, right? Oh, is this correct, Janine? Directorate of Market Abuse. You say it means the directorate of market and continues in terms of the... What does continues mean here in terms of the Securities Act?
Well, in relation to the particular directorate that currently exists in terms of the Financial Markets Act in the FSB, it actually had existed under previous legislation, two sets of previous legislation, the Insider Trading Act and the Securities Services Act. So this legal entity has continued in subsequent legislation. Even though that legislation was repealed, its existence
never saw that
continued
before,
in
continued.
The later legislation.
Okay, fine. My job is just to alert the committee to these issues, and once I've done my job, well, if the committee feels it wants to do certain things, it will. If it doesn't, then so be it. Okay, then small thing, Janine, the concurrence of under sub 4 and financial sector. Are you using N in a vowel sentence consistently or right, I'll leave that to you. Transitional prudential powers. Yeah, now you see, here is where, colleagues, we have to be a bit careful, right? But what the hell, what are we doing here? You see, we said that for a variety of reasons, we'll deal with that tomorrow, maybe on policy issues on transitional provisions. You have to have a date for the coming into effect of the bill into a law and then effecting it at a certain date. There are certain chapters will come into effect at different times, certain parts of certain chapters, and certain sections of certain parts at different times, if I'm correct. Tomorrow you'll give us an explanation. Now, you said that the section applies for the period of 3 years from the date on which. How you arrived at 3 days and will you, 3 years, and will you deliver by that time?
So the 3 years is seen as an introductory stepping stone period for the establishment of the two authorities. So we think that's a reasonable period to get those entities up and running. We have proposed or another period as that may be prescribed. So we have given some flexibility as well, so that if we go speedier, then those powers can be brought forward earlier. If it takes longer, then they can be put back.
But I think that given that we're entering into new territory, I think 3 years is reasonable.
Some criteria to arrive at it, right? I won't detain you now, we can raise it tomorrow. What I'm simply saying, one of the difficulties with this sort of thing is, in another 6 months, Mumu might be in Alaska. I might be in Mongolia. Tandi might be in Estonia. Right? Sifiso might be in... Where's the remote place I can think of? I don't know. Java. Right? So, these things, Mumu. And you know, the next generation that comes, this is a wonderful, definitely surrealistic thing about this committee. I mean, this parliament and this government. Every time there's a new head, political head of a committee, they act as if nothing happened before. And they start completely anew. No, though they've got the same party, the same national policy conference resolutions and so on. Now, the next year, yeah, we'll say, no, 3 years. No, man, do it now, 6 months' time. What's your problem? Whoever. Now, the thing is, you know what? We don't choose our successes, okay? And rightly so. Well, somebody was arguing to me, quite bizarrely, a person I like very much, that you see, you must be, you must not be like, the English sociological term is ethnocentric. That means self-centered around your own culture. You see, in North Korea, you can't say, it's not Marxist to have. We have no trade links with North Korea, I take it, right? So, so, I don't know.
I was getting worried, Chair. Last week, somebody slept at a meeting and got executed for sleeping at the
meeting.
Party.
Yeah, those are the things that happen.
Yeah.
As a minister?
Yeah.
Oh. I love that idea, actually. Why not? I know there's some people cheering here. Maybe I'll have that power someday. Right. So, colleagues, this is where we get into trouble. This 286. Can people please look at this? Now I'm being serious. Can people read this? I don't know what it means. Maybe you can start with that. You're saying you can develop policy frameworks. On the basis of what? This is the policy, or this is the legislative framework. So who's mandating you to do this, and how are you going to do this? Can you explain? I've never seen a clause like this before, Advocate Jenkins. I hope you're not sleeping, Advocate Jenkins. You heard what happens in a certain country. I love that power suddenly. I never think of, I will name you. Name you. I will name you, Kathy. Please, explain what you're doing here. You're not sliding something in here. Before people start defending you and all. I don't mean you as an individual. I mean the civil service in respect of politicians, anywhere in the world, including Sweden.
This you could actually blame me for, because this is actually a clause.
It is you. You see, my instinct. Exposed, right. I'm teasing. I didn't know it was you.
So the bill gives extensive standard-setting powers, as we've gone through. And so this... There has been, maybe I should take a step back. If we look at legislation, there's different ways of drafting legislation. You can have what we call a highly framework legislation, which is very enabling, and then it gives the regulators lots of powers to do all the nitty-gritty. Or you have law, which goes into a lot of the detail and is very prescriptive in the primary law itself. And then the regulator would just give effect and enforce the law, or supervise and enforce the law. We like to sit somewhere in between, but this piece of legislation could be argued to be much more on the framework side. In other words, we've given extensive standard-setting powers, particularly on both sides, without... where the regulator is then going to be giving greater articulation to how those standards will, or those that policy as you've described, will be exercised in terms of its mandate. So there have been, as you would have known, concerns raised about the standard-setting powers and the extent of those standard-setting powers, and there was discussion relating to the exercise of that responsibility between the executive versus the regulators, all of those discussions which we had. Understanding that we are on a course here and that we are, I mean, and this gets to the phase two issues as well, where we are further increasing our thinking around these various frameworks, be that on the prudential framework or the conduct framework. The intention here is to be able to give further articulation to what's being described in this bill through, in effect, Treasury policy documents, which is not inconsistent with how we exercise our functions anyway.
Just to ask members for some advice here, or decision making. You see, firstly, you do say not inconsistent with this Act, right? If you are referring to policy frameworks in a specific sense as spelled out on standard setting and related matters, would it not be safer for a committee to say, refer to those specific clauses? Secondly, am I clear? You're making, it's a very powerful headline, development and implement policy frameworks during the transitional period. But you don't in this case. You say the minister may, by notice published in the register, declare principles. It's declare. I mean, hey, no minister should be able to declare. What does this mean legally? I don't know. Now, elsewhere, you are bound to consult, you are bound to refer it to Parliament, even if Parliament doesn't come back to you. Now, one feels a bit nervous, you know. You know, my generation of tears are going to, I can get knocked down by a bus as I leave here. Okay, we would never allow this sort of thing in the first 5 to 10 years. Somebody must show me in this Parliament why we must be less rigorous now over the executive than we were in the first 10 years. In fact, if anything, we should be more rigorous. Because actually, we must make the executive to account in the interest of the people out there. This thing of declaring and so on, it's a wrong word, I would like to suggest. But before you come back, Kathy, I hear what you're saying. I don't feel comfortable. I'm pleading now because it's not a technical matter of an A missing or, you know, clarity issue. This is really about Parliament actually, once you open the door like this, the next time they draft a bill, they'll say, how? It's there in the Financial Sector Regulation Bill. These people sat for 4,000 hours on it. They approved of it. Why can't you have it yet? No. So can we, this one I really think we should park off. People should apply their mind to. But in the meanwhile, let's get the signal from the committee what they feel. Over. I see Sifuso's nodding his head. I'm pleased to see. Mr. Topham, I don't care whether you agree with me or not. I'm more interested in Sifuso. No, Mr. Topham, I'm teasing you. When he put his hand up first. But if a gentleman, never mind his MK background, thing is, he'll let you speak.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I agree with you. In theory, in that, it's very, very broad. Why can't we just use directives? Why can't you issue these principles in the form of directives, which has a mechanism inside for consultation and for appeal, etc.?
Using what policy frameworks and declaring, that's what makes me feel a bit jittery. I think you are right. So something like that makes sense, but hey, let's hold on. Let's hear Sifiso and anybody else who wants to speak. Antonia, I remember you're speaking right here.
Chair, I think I agree with you. I think it's too wide. So many things can come in here, and we'll be referred back to this section that you give this right to the executive and so on. So I agree. I think we let's try to limit it.
I think there's something to be said for the fact that the oldest dinosaur here and the newest baby are agreeing.
If I may, just reading it.
After you speak, I'm waiting for the members, please. Anybody else want to say anything? fine. No more you can speak. They're scared of you, so they don't want to say anything.
Thank you, Chair. No, no, I think reading it, it can also be abused. That's my worry. Okay. So I do think that it was meant more to be guidance principles, so and for the transition. And I think, you know, so we'll recraft it. I think it's...
Okay, fine. So we agree, right? Hands up those of you at 22:11 on a Friday night who don't have a life, who saw this thing. 22:11 on a Friday. Do you get extra time? What do you call that? Overtime pay? No. Okay, well in that case, Advocate Jenkins, can you read the paper? I would like to know whether it's appropriate for a chairperson to charge each member in the committee a percentage of a levy for having found something at 22:11 on a Friday night. At 8:60. You were right, he wasn't around. You've got this salary, they are only taking 50%, eh? 50%. Okay, fine. Fine. So therefore, all right, now on a more serious note, Kathy, don't argue with us, right? We're not going to budge on this. Yeah, good. So you can do what you want in the sense that you want it, but not in this form. Good? Agree. Right, can we move on to, when you say this part in 287, you're referring to the whole of part 6. Jenny, can you check whether it's appropriate here?
I did mention we're actually going to change most of the references, proposing to change generally the references to this part, to this section.
Good, because you're confusing part and section. Mr. Topham, if you must speak.
Why is it not this act? The question. I mean, this is all going to happen in one act. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be adopted.
Because we refer to, but fine.
Follow up. It only refers to, obviously, to the conduct authority's assets. So all the prudential authority's assets are at this moment vested in the Reserve Bank. There's nowhere else. And because that's carrying on, we don't have a similar section. All right. Confirm me.
Okay. Chair, Mr. Tom.
Why are you smiling, right? What's
so
funny?
You put a finger on a very interesting thing, which is that staff are moving across, but no assets are moving across.
Yeah.
All liabilities, actually. So, yeah. It's only the conduct authority. So the Reserve Bank's not getting anything out of this merger from an assets perspective.
Point of view. All right, Mr. Topham, are you okay? Or at least reasonably okay. Nobody's ever okay, yeah? Right, fine, you want to persist?
Sorry, no, not understanding. Because yeah, we only speak about the FSB assets moving to the conduct authority, which is a separate thing to the Reserve Bank.
Correct.
And the staff of the FSB also moving over there. But where did the Reserve Bank staff are presumably, theoretically, staying in the Reserve Bank unless there's a swap strategically and vice versa. So the assets of the Reserve Bank and the staff are theoretically subject to staying there, and FSB stuff and any FSB is moving into. So the gold reserves that people are arguing about are staying where they are with the shareholders.
Right, so okay. No, that's fine. Okay, can we move on then? Good, thank you very much. Now, part appears again in 4, the last line, and part again in 2881A. I think we get the drift. Right, now I'm not really clear what this means, right? Can we be clear? Look under 2A, Roy. Now, what are we saying here? That a person... Read this thing, right, Janine? A person was employed by the FSB and remained continually so employed until he or she died or retired from the Financial Services Board. Now, can I get something clear? If he or she dies, are we talking about support for he or she's spouse and family? Is that clear? So I'm very worried if we're going to waste money on somebody who's dead, right? It just won't be right, Momo, now that you've got cost containment and all that. It's not very clear, but anyway, maybe this was been around 10:45 at night, so maybe you can forgive me. But this committee will never agree that if somebody is dead, that you should continue to provide them health services. Until science. advances to that extent, where you can bring back somebody to life after they've died.
I think paragraph B is linked to paragraph A, and it refers to dependence, including dependence of persons who would be beneficiaries.
You see, this qualification, make a statement and you qualify later. This may be one of the examples of the sort of drafting wonkiness, in my view, anyway, subjective as it may be, that the bill sometimes reflects. Grammatically, is it sound 289.1? Does it make sense? Please read that quickly, Jane. Will you mull over that? Not here, but just look at it. I don't think it's sound. 290, 291, 292. Anybody, any questions? No. Right, 292. What's this enforcement committee? Is it clear which enforcement committee of which structure? Because I look for enforcement at the beginning. There's no generic definition, right? Are we clear there, Janine? Will you look it up? Or do you want to say something quickly? Is it clear, right?
Yeah, it's called up to the beginning of that part. I think we define it. If we don't, we will define it.
You see, later you speak of, in 3A and B, the Enforcement Committee of the Security Services Act. Then you speak of the Enforcement Committee of the FSB. But in 291A, you speak of the Enforcement Committee. Which Enforcement Committee are we talking about?
If you look at part 6 at the start, the things that these are transitional provisions.
So where's part 6? Or at the beginning?
Yeah. So it's only for this part. It's to get the FSB structures to have continuity into the new regime.
Oh, fine. Okay, fine. It's covered. Is that right, Advocate Jenkins? I think it is. Good, good. I apologize for holding the meeting up. I will return part of the money I'm going to get from you. Right, 294. I don't have anything. 293. Anybody got anything? 295. You say at 295.1, in accordance with the financial sector law. Which financial sector law are you referring to?
Define at the start all your financial sector laws, so it's in terms of any of those.
So it's fine to say with that.
We'll just double check the word.
All right, we'll check it out. Thank you. Right, can we move on to, I think there's a word missing in sub 7, am I right? Of. A period of not more than 6 months. Will you check that out? I think of is missing in the last line. Okay. Then we move on to the next one, the end of the financial year, next after the finance. Is that, can you look at that? It's a bit clumsy. After, don't you say after rather than next in this context? Will you look at that outside this meeting? Next seems a bit clumsy.
We're probably going to simplify that clause quite substantially.
Anyway, all right. Okay.
It's a day fixed by the minister. We're getting confused with the financial year.
Fine. Can we also make it clearer and less clumsy? Thank you. Then we move on to the last clause. Colleagues notice here, right? It says that this act comes into a date determined by the minister. So you have some latitude to, like, you know, introduce this into effect based on your capacity and other issues. And two, different dates for different provisions, I see it here. Different provisions of this act, different categories, and the appeal or amendment of different provisions of a law or appeal or amendment. I think this is a nice way of covering you. In the way you can't know how you're going to implement and by what deadline and so on. Right, that's done.
Before you run, we did highlight this last time, but just to remind you that we have this additional club sub 3, which just even gives us more latitude in terms of allowing the.
Yeah, you told us about this already.
And then we also just that other clause, we need to go up a little bit, 290, the new 296. Which provides for the minister to make regulations providing for transitional arrangements.
Do you take us through this, eh?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we like this. And look, all of this makes it easier and makes it feel more comfortable that the department is not being over-ambitious. We covered this. I like it personally. I think we all do, maybe. Topham? Mr. Topham?
Sorry, on this area as such. The existing licenses and existing for the insurers, FIs, banks, etc., where do we say that in the Act? They stay in effect and they roll over automatically. Because we've transferred assets, etc., there. I'm sure it's somewhere, so I'm sure it's somewhere.
The Act.
long, I remember reading somewhere, I just want to make sure that we just, I'll leave it then to stuff. Make sure it's there.
I'm not sure which numbering you have, but under 295?
Let's deal with it now if it's clear.
Yeah,
so it saves Antonia burdening, burdening Antonia.
Yeah, savings of approval, consent, or other. It is there.
All right, so we're done. Mr. Topham, you're happy. Mr. Batalez, excuse
me. Sorry to take you back to section 298.
Yeah.
298. I'm saying as to when it comes to effect and different sections coming into effect. Do you want just to leave it so much open? What if the minister decides that for the next 5 years that sections which are not different provisions of the Act to come at different times? Do you want to put some limitation onto this thing? Momo has been taking us here, and this thing is, you don't want him to take this thing and put it in the shelf, and that's it.
Because when I was reading this on Friday, I also thought about that. If I'm right, it's a good question, Sufizo. If I'm right, we've never done that before that I can think of. Where we have done it, it's not in this genetic clause. Like, I think in the Municipal Systems Act, if Makosi can remember, what he did is we did give some deadlines. If you do it here, I don't think there's any problem. But firstly, it's not as if the minister can decide not to implement the Act for years. I mean, anybody can go to court, and this Parliament will hold you and say, hey, you know what, we're going to put in our report that we're monitoring this. And I really think that because it's such a big bill, I think, you know, I don't know, but at least once a quarter we need to get progress reports. So rather than put it here, there may be provisions that we can look at, if you say. I'm not saying don't retreat. I'm just telling you my experience of processing legislation for what it's worth. But we're living in a new era now, and some changes we should make. So let me ask the first person to ask is Advocate Jenkins. This is like more or less a generic clause, right? But he is right to ask, have you come across a case where a committee has actually set it outside of a full discussion on the implementation program of the department? Let me say this to you. I am astonished, Advocate Jenkins. I used to chair Justice for my sins, right? And the Child Justice Act, which we spent hours, and we had civil society literally sitting here, like industries, all the NGOs were here. We even set up a subcommittee of experts, academics, and so on. And they sat here till the moment we decided to formally vote on the bill. We even went, Advocate Jenkins' colleague, just let me tell you what we did. We refused to vote on that bill. We said, show us your implementation program. Then only you vote on that bill. We sat here for a whole day. We then tweaked some of the bill, some of the provisions to say, no, you're not going to be able to do this. I am astonished how little. When was I chairing that committee? Last I chaired it was 2009. I think we passed that bill in 2008. It is what, 2016 now. Aspects of that program, Momo, has not even been implemented. And it's an interesting thing. There's been two chairs, maybe three in that committee. And obviously the chairs that come in, I'm not saying, I'm not passing any value judgment. I didn't look at what Thabo Mofumahadi did. I just read his exit report. But I didn't, and Thabo Mofumahadi didn't read what Nene has done. So I do think it's time we reviewed these things. So firstly, Advocate Jenkins, has this been done before, where in a provision like this we put something in?
The provision is rather progressive in my view. I haven't read all the legislation, but it's not new. I mean,
what Peter's asking is, shouldn't Parliament put deadlines and say, you know, different provisions, you have to know which provision, it's a Herculean task, and want to think about it, but it's a good question. Help us for the future era that we're entering into now, where Parliament needs to also adjust its ways in drafting legislation and how we hold executive to account for bills that are passed here.
Deadlines, Chairperson, I would rather prefer principles. Deadlines doesn't take into account what can happen and what is not going to happen, because different parts will require regulations, other parts will require maybe more information. preparatory work, setting up the new institutions to do what needs to be done. So one wants to leave it open in a way, and it is Parliament's job to look then at the implementation of it, as you indicated. So while you don't want to constrain the department to say, look, within the next 3 years you must do this and that and that, somehow Parliament needs to have a mechanism, and we are developing those mechanisms, tracking mechanisms to see what our legislation is doing. We have this high-level panel now chaired by former President Galema Motlanthe. But Chair, from my side, I don't think a deadline is really going to help, because when you miss it, what do? You change the act. I mean, we've done that before as well, if I'm not mistaken, with the retirement reform. So it's a bit, what is it that you want to do? If you really want to get into it, the principles should be there. For me, what will drive this process, if I can give the Honourable Buthelezi some comfort, is to say that clearly there's going to be institutions that are saying, well, why is that law applying to my competitor in the market, but why doesn't it apply to my competitors, but it applies to me? Why are we being treated differently because the minister has said that certain of the provisions apply to some sectors and doesn't apply to me? And with the industry the way it is, that some institutions will do most of the financial issues and others to some of it, one can also say with sections or parts of the Act coming into operation. So you have the remedy, which is of course only for those with deep pockets, to say, okay, there's an irrationality in this bringing certain parts into operation and others not. So that is a sort of a check and balance approach that we can have, but that's the normal one of going to court to say, well, I don't think it's rational that you bring in certain parts and not other parts. It is a finance industry, so one can expect that there will be deep pockets, but I would guard against time frames, specific deadlines. Parliament does have an obligation in the Constitution to see that this Act is implemented after we've passed it. And then there is the issue where people can challenge the department and the minister of bringing certain sections into operation at certain times.
But I think, Sipisa, don't brilliant. It's not just because you're a new member. You're also raising, I should have raised it actually. There's no need to apologize. Actually, it's a good question. Tandi, you want to say something? And we need to apply.
Chair, for the first time I differ with Advocate Jenkins. You know, when I was a chair, I used to be frustrated when we don't track the decisions that you have taken and the time frames that were not clear in terms of reporting lines. Remember, time frames is not about just a date to say in 3 months time, but is to make sure that things are implemented within a record time, because you give the accounting officer an opportunity to say, I'll be able to report on this matter within a year or in 2 years' time and so on. If there is no timeline, how then do you measure that performance? Because anybody can say, but there was no timeline, therefore we're still looking into the matter. So I beg to differ. We need to have the capacity to look and track the decisions that we've taken and put timelines on them to, as part of performance. The performance, the key performance indicators put timelines and why they, when it relates to the relationship between Parliament and government, there is no timeline. It doesn't make sense to me. If there are reasons, they'll be considered in an event that the timeline was not adhered to. I think we should look at it differently. He responded in a normal, technical, legal way.
We are. There is a compromise, if you so. You see, Advocate Jenkins, why can't we... You see, I know you're going to say it's inelegant and all. You know, I've been through this with you guys. Kara used to give me a hard time when I used to chair. You know, you're going to say under short title and commencement you don't do this, but tell me something. What would be the crime if we put the department or the minister, whatever is appropriate, will report to Parliament regularly on progress on implementing the bill? Right, firstly, we could put that in the law, but you might say, hey, that's implied. Then if we can't do that, if there's a general consensus around it, then we put in the report to Parliament that every quarter the department must report on progress. The reason why I would like to suggest, colleagues, that we can't put under 2A different provisions of this Act, it would mean that the department will have to know almost every provision here that has a transitional aspect, when it's going to be. So we put in different provisions. We'll have to then, as a committee, look at each of those provisions and say, on this provision, on this date, this provision, then really you can't write a bill like that. But what is wrong, Advocate Jenkins? Can we put sub 3 that says the department will report regularly to Parliament on implementation of the bill? Or you're going to say, but that's implied already in the constitutional thing. You're not an advocate, Momo. You're a professor of mathematics. Now, Advocate Jenkins, help us. What would be the crime?
There's no crime, and it's totally within our...
Has it been done before in any bill that you know of? Not that we shouldn't therefore do it.
Not on necessarily the
implementation. Not on the short title and commencement. Eh?
No, not there.
Yeah, it doesn't appear. It's the wrong place. But let's agree on this. We'll put it in the report come what may. Will you apply your mind whether we can put it in some way above short title and commencement, noting clause 298 below or whatever, you know, but then I don't think we do that. Look, I don't know, can you mull over it? Let's get back to Momo now.
No, Chair, we don't mind putting a deadline of 2 to 3 years. Obviously, if there's difficulty, we come back to Parliament, like Advocate Jenkins has said, to get an extension. We'd have to explain that, okay? But it would bring certainty, so we don't have a problem. But remember, we did the same thing with our retirement reform. We even said a date it would start, and then we'd have a haul back to Parliament to change that date, so...
The point you're making, Sipiso and Tandi, I agree with 100%. I think Advocate Jenkins, you need to apply your legal mind to this issue. I think Parliament mustn't keep it open-ended like this. Interestingly, this time around, even the executive representative is agreeing, right? So having said that, let's mull over it. Certainly in our report, Antonio, we should put it there. We can't put precise deadlines. Let's discuss with you a bit more tomorrow, when we look at transitional provisions and your program of implementation. What's a reasonable time frame, Sipiso? Okay. Having said that, there's a chapter on fees, right? We said we would discuss that, but presumably that... yes, Mr. Brandon? Mr. Thomas?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, before we go to new section, can we just go back to that 295 in the old, or the July version, and 293?
Yeah, yeah.
The 295.1 or 293.1 says an authorization, approval, registration, consent, or similar permission given in terms of the financial blah, blah, blah. Rolls over. Not one of those words are defined, but the word license is defined, and it basically says a lot of that. So by leaving out the word license, I'm scared that it could be argued that it wasn't intended to be there. So potentially, so they're not considered adding the word license in 295.1 to make it certain that it's understood as license as well as directors previously, etc.
We think this is a good point. We'll make sure that that's completely clear. It's certainly the intention that that should be included.
Thank you, Mr. Topham. Now, can we, Momo, are we right? The chapter on fees is very small, right? We're going to deal with it when we look at the overall policy thing. Having said that, Cathy, are we correct, Roy, to say we're done with the bill now? Well, not a bill, it's a bill except the schedule.
Yes.
Okay. The non-sufficio part.
Yes.
Yeah, I hope Sipiso is listening. Right. Then the thing is,
yes.
What? Now we need the CAFI clauses, yes. Or is there something else?
Do we need the CAFI clauses? No. Do we want to with the CAFI clauses?
Okay, well, one more time. So,
Chair, the lawyer on the left has whispered in my ear that I can start again at clause one, but CAFI will explain.
So... I think just to take us back when we started working through the bill clause by clause, we did not actually sign off. Well, not us. The committee didn't actually work through the detail of the definitions. So, and then we had started doing the clause by clause after that.
So just in terms of procedure, we just want to make sure that we take the committee back and we have in fact covered all of the ground so that there are no surprises.
My records, we have ticked off many of these definitions. There were some that we said would only be decided on once we process the bill. So it is those things you're talking about. No, then those are the CATI clauses. I don't know what's specific about the definitions. That's what we mean by CATI clauses. Remember, CATI, we can't trust you, not in the individual sense of integrity. We can't trust you because then we're abandoning and abrogating our role. It's actually the Antonio clauses. I mean, not actually, let's be fair, Antonio's a researcher. It's the Jenkins clauses. No, I think you must agree now. There's the Cifiso stuff that Cifiso is responsible for. There's the Jenkins stuff that Jenkins is responsible for. My role hopefully ends, my formal role, because I'm Cifiso's buddy. I'll come there and support you. But my role, Advocate Jenkins, ends tomorrow at 4:45. Is that right? Yeah. So basically, and Mr. Mania is going to go to court and say, we rushed this bill. That, you know, because he didn't get what he wanted, right? Everything he says, if you don't agree with, it's unconstitutional, it's been rubber stamped and all that. You know, monopoly capital, you must write letters, right? And say, although we love the DA, we can't agree that the bill was rubber stamped. Okay. Monopoly capital, I mean. I'm not referring to you as individuals. You may be voting for the Communist Party. I don't know, my friend. Monopoly capital, I mean as a class. As a class enemy of the National Democratic Movement, let alone the socialist movement in this country. Now, what I'm saying is, Mr. Jenkins will also check these things. Do you really, colleagues, want to go through them all now unless they're a policy or conceptual issue in the definition? Or do you want to leave it to the Jenkins process? Sorry? Why? Okay. Fine. So Commissar Tandi Tobias Pakula will give us a lecture on that matter on Thursday morning. She will not go home on Thursday, she will give us a lecture on that issue. And Mania will be here to listen to her. For the rest, people like Makosi and me, we've got a life. Don't ask what life, but we do. Yeah, David and you, Tandi. Yeah, David will have to be here. That's why, you see, you know, let me tell you what I really think, colleagues. You see, David's got nothing to do on Thursday morning. So he thought and he racked his brains and he said, what can I do? Let's have an emergency meeting on something, urgent meeting. Then he phoned his researcher, that fellow that comes in and out, who seems to be, and asked the researcher, is there something that I can make an emergency issue? And the researcher says, no, Mr. Mania, nothing. Then suddenly he looked down, he was having his tea and he saw an article in the Sunday Times, old Sunday Times, spoiled with oil stains and his tuna fish sandwich lying there. He says, hey, Mr. Mania, what about this bed south at feet? They're fighting. How nice. Let's expose them. So he came with this idea because he had nothing to do on Thursday morning. But Mr. Mania, in your absence, your two colleagues, your underlings, your the people you oppress, they decided that you are going to serve in that Cifiso committee. And Cifiso, you know, unlike me, I don't have an MK background, you do. Sort him out. Sort him out in that committee. I will just keep quiet. I'll say I'm just an ordinary member here. I'm not accountable. I don't have to repeat my platitudes, constitutional role, and I'm chair to chair, whatever that might mean, and so on and so on. So fine. Now, Kathy, just deal with the conceptual ones. Let's go quickly, please. Because by now we must have reached consensus on most things. No? On the definitions, which are the ones that I'm not agreed to. They call the CATI clauses, we're in that stage. By the way, despite the nattering of the chair, we are doing better than I thought we would. Now he's being rude.
There were no controversial definitions, unless the specific ones
were so, but
CATI, if CATI has noted those that she believes
I agree with you. Tandi, now Mr. Mania, can you go on record? do you want us, because when you go to the court, Advocate Jenkins can just write a note noting this. Mr. Mania, would you like to go through the outstanding definitions of the definition sections that have been dealt with in policy? Would you like to go through the definition?
Yes.
Right, so shall we go for it?
Chair, but don't just give me latitude to
because
say...
Because he's going to go to court.
Which specific definition?
Yeah, which ones are you concerned about? Presumably you read this last night and you know which one. Okay, Mr. Mania, can you guide the committee? Because there's lots of ticks here. There's very few ones that I haven't ticked. Will you confirm that your church going, or religion going person? Oh, no, they won't trust you. All right, fine. I don't know who you're going to trust. Teboho, I know you are, which you won't be able to tell. All right, fine. You want to see my notes? You can see them. Most of them are ticked off. Okay, Mr. Mania, tell me, which are the ones that you preoccupy with? What's your mandate?
We don't feel particularly strongly about the definitions, Joe. We're in your hands.
Can you note that? Right. Mr. Topham, now you want to show off. You want to take over his post. Oh, okay.
Just one definition, Mr. Chair, which I think should be revised. The collective investment scheme, it defines it as being as defined in the Collective Investment Schemes Act. Now that act will be repealed, if I'm correct. It's not been... Okay.
Mr. Topham, that's fair. And I catch you and alert us to anything quickly. It's major, but otherwise can we leave it to the Jenkins process? Now, CIPISA is another process. Please, don't confuse things, thinking you were not here last week. Please, don't get into trouble. And read your documents. It was emailed to you on Monday morning, please. Whip, where's the whip? Sort her out. She didn't read the document. Right. Over to you, Kathy.
So there's been a lot of different views here.
Now, the view is there anything major?
What we're going to do is...
That you can't leave to the Jenkins process.
No, I think we should actually rather do it through the Jenkins process, because then we can make sure
that... So it took
you
so long to come to that. All right, fine. What's the high-quality conclusion? Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. Now, Kathy, take us to the outstanding clauses quickly. The definition is sorted out. Are there other issues that you think are of major policy stroke conceptual nature? So it all goes to the Jenkins process? Right.
So the only other outstanding that I think, so both of them go to the Jenkins process, is the financial stability definition. So we hadn't, there were questions around that, and I think Roy wasn't here on that day, and then there were also, you wanted Roy because there were issues relating to the study trip that had emerged through the stability. So I think if we can cover that, then immediately after that we can move on to the schedule.
All right, yeah, we will do that because that's what you suggested, right? Then tomorrow, the UK study tour report, you've got copies of it, Colin, it's on your email and it's printed. Tomorrow we'll just go through that quickly. Let me alert you that the NCOP committee's come back from Mexico 2 weeks ago. I've spoken to the chair and the whip and the other chair and said, please, we are finalizing the bill. Even if you can't give us the full report, can you send the bullet points to us? Because that's a developing society. And it'll have lessons that our trip to the UK wouldn't have had. And they've promised to let us have it by Thursday. I'll email it to you as soon as I get it. When we come back, we'll go through that then. Right, fine. Having said that, can we then move on, Kathy? Help us.
The financial stability definition.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's from our UK visit, right? Where they said it's not clear what financial stability actually means in the context. It seems to change at different conjunctures and so on. And they required you, us, were there, to have a more finite definition, but one that's also flexible for different circumstances, right? Something like that, if I remember. Over to you, Kathy, quickly, please.
I think what came up in the study tour, which is in the report, I think was very interesting, is that comment by George Osborne, who is no longer famous, he's now an ex-minister, of you don't want the financial stability of the graveyard. So you don't want to have law that goes so far as to create sort of, I think, financial paralysis, which is sort of close to financial stability. We have as one of the objectives in the law that you must always worry about balanced and sustainable growth in the Republic, which is actually from the Constitution. We could include wording like that in the financial stability definition. I don't think it's completely necessary because it is already in the Prudential Authority's requirements and in the Reserve Bank Act and in the Constitution. But that might be a way of qualifying the idea that, you know, you don't want absolute financial stability. And then there have been some proposals around making sure that we capture things like the Johannesburg Stock Exchange and the the Strait, and that they are able to actually continue to perform their functions as market infrastructures. But I think that's what was really interesting to me from the study tour in terms of this definition, was this: you don't want this financial paralysis. I'm finished. Yeah.
I really do. Can we have your time? Do you want to say something? No, I agree, actually. It's why we picked it up. Anybody wants to comment, especially Pinky and Mr. Mania, who were there with us? No. Dumasani, of course, has fled. I raised it with him. Fled. And what's the name? Bridget has fled. We should have a contract. People go overseas on study tours or wherever. They must reappear in the committee until we finish the book, right? But Dumasani is working very hard, I must say. Not with us, unfortunately. Yeah, Tandi. Right. So we're done. Okay? Now, can I get some guidance from you, Advocate Jenkins? I meant to speak to you before this committee meeting, but I didn't get the time. You see, I've looked at these schedules yesterday. Man, there can be nothing more boring, right? Nothing. Excruciatingly. I want to ask you, how is the average chairperson supposed to look at something like this and say, ah, okay, I must look at how many thousands of bills must I look at, or X that you are amending? So what I want to ask you is, other committees that have dealt with schedules like this, fortunately, I've never had to deal with schedules that are so far-ranging and so many in number, and requiring a sort of knowledge of the sector that is phenomenal. So what I want to ask you is, what would be a constitutionally sound way of dealing with this thing? Obviously, we can have a subcommittee and so on, but there has to be some committee consideration. So what I'm asking is, can you guide us? How can we do this?
Chairperson, each of these amendments proposed in the schedule can be seen actually as an amendment bill on its own. It's just all trapped into one schedule or two schedules. So my suggestion is that as we dealt with this bill, we need to look at the schedule. We need to get, if possible, some kind of briefing from the department to say what is the intention behind this amendment. What were the kind of public comments that you received on these amendments? And then the committee needs to have a political discussion on it, whether it's acceptable, and much like we did with the clauses of the bill. I feel I have to apologize to the committee for saying it, but it is, each one of them is an amendment bill on its own, although it's trapped in a schedule.
What is required of us? In other words, we can't treat it any differently from the way we treat clauses of a bill. The second issue then, the form in which we do it is ultimately our decision, right? We can set up a subcommittee, but as with all subcommittees on bills or any policy decisions, they have to report to the committee. Right. But there are ways in which we can deal with this thing that meets the requirements of the committee as a whole and the CIFISA process. And we came to this proposal last week where we said, where there are contested provisions here in the schedules, we deal with that first. So where industry, whether you agree with them or not, or whether we agree with them or not, no matter how irritating they may be, let's hear what they have to say. So we have to look at the matrix. I looked at the matrix, right? But what I'm trying to say, you see, Mr. Jenkins, a committee can't approve unless they know what the cross-reference is to a particular bill. And how are we going to do that sitting in the committee? That means we have got to get all these acts, right, here, and then look at each of these acts. So that we can't do in a committee, Mr. Jenkins. You agree? Good. Right, Marcosi, have you got any ideas?
Chair, I wanted to know, just going back a bit on that financial stability definition, is that the definition that we are going to be, that is going to be in the bill?
When you were still sleeping, you did that.
No, I'm asking. It's a serious connotation. I just need to check.
Yeah, remember, this is phase two. Then we're going to get version three bill. We're going to go through
Of course, Chair, you know my...
But say what you want to say now. It's helpful.
No, Chair, what I'm saying, I know I've missed quite a few discussions on the Twin Peaks bill, but my own concern is that if we are going to be talking about, you know, like for example, where you refer to, you know, generally provide, I'm not very, you know, the generally provide financial products and financial services and market infrastructure, generally perform their functions and duties in terms of financial sector laws. The challenge with that is that that may be, somebody may be doing something within the law, but may not necessarily be consistent with the current economic environment of that time. Say a bank probably decides it's still doing its job, but it's lending recklessly, you know, like but within the law, and which may result in, you know, some kind of financial crisis in the country and so forth. Now, I'm not so sure about, I would rather have standards probably attached or something like that in respect of that, so that you don't leave it so open, because we are not dealing with a very predictable, it's not like R plus R equal R or something like that, you know what I mean? So there are other factors that we need to take into account, especially when we're dealing with this kind of industry, because there is so much at play. No, I'm saying that that definition to me, I don't know. It's something, there's something vague about it, and there is something that might, I'm not a legal guru, Advocate Jenkins is, probably sees something right there, but to me as a layperson, looking at that definition, I'm just not so comfortable.
You respond to her, and then we'll have Advocate Jenkins.
Chair, no, it's a very good point. I mean, I can't tell you how many work sessions we've had between the regulators to discuss this definition. You know, they say financial stability is like oxygen, is that you don't know that you don't have it until you don't have it. You know, then you suddenly realize you can't breathe. And it's very difficult to actually tie down the definition without actually making it quite general. And so it's almost specifically crafted to be reasonably vague. Where we use it in the bill, though, later on we use it very specifically. So we try to sort of balance out the vagueness of the definition with very specific usages of the definition, if that helps at all. We found it very difficult to say, when do you not have financial stability? It's really hard to define. And it's really up to the Reserve Bank to make a case for the fact that there is financial instability, I would say. Yeah, which is very specific. So it's a very good point, but, you know, we... Yeah.
The issue of the Appropriations Committee having approved of our report that he's raising. It's related to, I've got
just to add to what Roy is saying, yeah. So if we look at the definition of stability, and I just want our Janine and them to hear this. So financial stability means you've got to have N, because what's the N? So it's got to be all three, which then implies that instability is, if one of those doesn't apply, it could be instability. The way we define instability, it's A, N, B, and C. I'm asking our lawyers to check. Okay? And the way it's written, so instability is if one of the three doesn't apply. Right. Okay. No, no, I just want to be clear that we're all clear. Clear, clarifying my own...
Unati, can you, let's take Chandi and then Unati.
Chair, the way it is crafted and the way Roy explains is adequate, but there's one element that we might want to pay attention to. You see, if you look at C, it says there is general confidence in the ability of financial institutions to continue to provide financial products and financial services. The word general confidence can be interpreted differently, but what covers ground is when you say without interruption despite changes in economic circumstances. Now this actually speaks to as and when they perform their duties in terms of the financial sector law. You see, the way you have crafted it there, it's fine. But look at when you say the general confidence. That can be interpreted differently, right? Stick to the adherence to the financial sector laws, because they are very clear what is expected from financial institutions in terms of the performance of their duties and functions, right? So that covers it. It speaks to financial stability. It also covers you in an event that you had to be litigated when you observing an element of recklessness and you want to take them to task and they say, but we've been doing our work. You'll be able to say, but you have actually not followed the financial sector laws, and you'll be able to indicate which ones in particular they've not followed to the last. So that, I so wish that sentence where it says their functions and duties in terms of financial sector laws should have been the one that starts immediately after explaining and defining what do you mean by financial stability, if you get the point. But I'm not saying change the text, I'm just highlighting why you are right in terms of how you put it, and why the importance to have a definition that is open-ended, that doesn't go to specifics, because in an event that you experience different operational issues that has not been envisaged, you'll be able to be still covered by the law, because first you'll check whether is the operation of that financial institution within the prescripts of the financial sector law. If it is, then you're covered. I don't know whether I'm making sense in this context.
You know, Chair, I think Momo and Tandi, somehow they are assisting me. I think as well, Tandi, it might be important for us to change the sequencing there of all those points that we are making. You know, if we are going to put B before A, to me it begins to crystallize this thing. And again, there which means that, instead of saying means that, say means the following, so that it's not read, you know, in a disjointed manner. It's related, it's read in whole as in part. You understand what I'm saying? I would think B, to me, would make more sense if we are putting it there, because maybe as A, and then probably B, I mean A as B or something like that, and you change that to the following or something like that.
Nati and then Advocate Jenkins, help us here.
Chair, maybe just to start with Momo's question, I think we definitely think you should have all of three. And maybe let me explain why the sub is comfortable with the three components that are there. So it's talking to the three preconditions for the existence of financial stability, which is that financial institutions are able to do what they are needed for in the financial system, and secondly, that they are resilient to shocks, both economic and financial shocks, and thirdly, that there is confidence in their ability to do and to continue to do what they are needed for in the financial system. So if there's maybe, you know, changing the sequencing, I mean, I wouldn't go to war about it, but we're quite comfortable that the three preconditions are covered by this definition. You might, even the tweaking of the words, I mean, maybe discuss whether you want to have, you know, functions and duties in terms of financial sector laws, given the issue that is being raised about people, you know, you can do whatever you need to do within the law and still cause a systemic event. But I think the broad frame of what you need to look at to see if there is financial stability. I think that definition definitely covers those three preconditions in our view.
Fine. Jenkins, can you help us?
Sure, maybe I can just, I mean, I agree with what has been said here, and the sequencing of IBNC is also, I think that's neither here nor there for me from a legal point of view, if the committee prefers it like that, but from where I'm sitting, legal point, to say, when will there not be, maybe the oxygen example, when will there not be financial stability? In other words, when is the object of the act being frustrated? And certainly one can then say, it's when the normal person in the street feels that I can't go and open a bank account or buy an insurance policy. So for me, that is covered there, and I don't think there's chance of litigation around this issue, because I think it's just trying to set out what this Act wants to achieve, and it's maybe I must go study the text in detail, because can it be that, you know, based on the threat that you might not have financial stability, I'm not going to give a license. That's obvious, because you're not going to achieve the object of the Act. So, Chair, actually, I don't have much to say about it, because I'm talking myself into a spin here.
Yeah. It's very good that you raised it. I didn't see it as a problem, and maybe it's based partly on my subjective, maybe, interpretation of what the people in London said, right? But it's very good that you raised it. I think we're edging towards a consensus from what I can see. Mr. Topham, do you want to botch the whole consensus up now? Do you really want to? Okay.
I view the answer, there's obviously just an and missing now. There must be an and after A, whichever sequence it ends up in, just to make sure it's clear. All three.
It's very stupid. These people, Jenkins and them, they think they can use the language the way they want. Or actually means and or. So you never really know whether it means and or and or only or only and. You see? So then they can get away. Then they can have huge fights and make lots of money about what it means. Yeah. I've raised this thing in 1998. Don't laugh, Candy. The prospects of world socialism are greater than resolving that issue. Yes, Janine.
The proposal that it's necessary to add and after A, the general interpretation of the clauses is as Momo has indicated, that you have the and at the second last clause, and then it requires and for all of them. Yes. Just for the committee members, in reading...
It's not five, it's four. That must be in Mangong.
And for Acton Jenkins, in reading this clause, remember this is the way that the bill is structured. You read the stability, this financial stability clause, and again the systemic event clause. So the financial stability, you'll see when it's used, it's the promotion of. You must promote this. But when there's a systemic event, which is much more specific, that's when the powers kick in.
Yeah, I don't know why it took so long to say it, but good. Thank you. Right. Are we done then? Thank you. Right. Then let's move on to the schedules. Now, what I'm suggesting is we do what the process we agreed on is, right? So, can I say straightforwardly that there's some things we can adopt now, informally, right? Schedule 1, I looked at this yesterday. Now, how is the committee supposed to identify yet another law? So from now, is there anything from industry or civil society or whatever, or whoever, sorry, that affects Schedule 1? Are there any other acts that you've omitted to mention?
Chair, I really hate to say it, but I'm going to say it to be completely open and honest with the committee.
You're not doing us a favour.
No,
you
I
have don't. To be. No choice.
I have no... What did Washington say? I have no choice but to be honest. Schedule 1, the big issue is that the National Credit Act is not listed as a financial sector law. And that has come up in a lot of engagements, and we have, as you know, it's one of the themes of the discussion, and I guess it is what it is, but we have agreed that it is not a financial sector law. But that you're aware that is, I guess... Yeah. The Payment System Act one is slightly less serious. It really just reflects the fact that we are not bringing the payment system into the Twin Peaks system exactly as the Twin Peaks system is set up. It's sort of still left outside. But on the National Grid Regulator, the issue is that it's not within the bounds of this law, but that is what we have agreed to.
Yeah, besides the credit, we've expressed our views on that before. Questions for the Reserve Bank specifically, Mr. Chair. In the Act, an investigation can be launched for any contravention of a financial sector law. So therefore, it's got to be contravention in terms of this. Okay. How often does the harmful business practice, there's an Act there by trading industry, does that fall part of the investigations of the Reserve Bank? Because I think it does sometimes, and if that's the case, then either we've got to include it, yeah, or maybe we have to really change the investigation. But if something that probably Khalif at the FSB would know better about. We just raise it so that they can go and check.
Yeah, happy to go and check it. So, I mean, what we would normally do, for example, that there would be contraventions that are not clear whether they are contraventions of the Banks Act. So we would actually invoke powers in terms of the sub-act to investigate. I don't think any of the consequentials are taking away that power, but they are preserving that power. So it will be in addition to the investigative powers that we have in the FSRB. But happy for Janine and I to sit and check the particular concern.
The reason I'm just going to motivate them to consider its potential inclusion is because it's one of those grey areas. So if you, for instance, create a pyramid scheme involving agriculture, it's not a financial product per se, but it has the same effect. So in the past, I think they couldn't investigate because it wasn't. So it might be handy at this point in time to consider it, because it's this prudential authority that plays a role in closing down, because the DTI committee that could do it doesn't have the capacity, etc. So,
excuse me. What I'm asking here then is, so what are we saying on this topic quickly? Sorry? Okay, so you'll follow up on that. Fine. Then on the National Credit Act now, you know, you had this deal between yourselves and the Department of Trade and Industry and the regulator. What was the agreement you arrived at in respect of whether it appears in Schedule 1 or not? Yeah, DTI, are you here? Oh, there you are. Okay, they'll speak for themselves. Then, you know, I didn't notice it, right? But let's have both of you speak. Whoever wants to speak first, fine.
Thanks, Chair. I'll probably prefer that the leader of the task team, you know, provide you with the feedback in terms of what we have agreed upon.
Do you want to reply then?
So, keeping in mind that where financial sector law is referenced in this bill, it often relates to powers and, you know, be it standard-setting powers and the likes. So, the credit regulator, in terms of the Credit Act, has got its own framework by which it exercises its functions and mandate. And so what that would mean is, if it was listed as a financial sector law, we would in effect be giving it an overlay of powers in addition, so investigation powers, access to the appeal mechanisms, etc. So it's not one of those things that you can do piecemeal. It either is within this framework, and then it operates alongside and would operate identically alongside these authorities, or it operates in terms of its act, which it currently has. And as the decision has been it will be continuing operating in its act, it would be inappropriate to put it listed as a financial sector law in this instance.
Yes.
Further to what Kathy said, I think it's relevant to note that this schedule is really actually part of a definition, and it's providing the content to a definition. And the legislation that's listed here is the legislation that legitimately falls within the scope of the authorities that are being established and under the Minister of Finance. And so looking at other legislation that may fall under other authorities and other ministers, you have to when you're developing legislation, you have to be cognizant of you can't be, you know, just legislating into other terrains that are not necessarily within your legitimate domain. And so in those instances, you may have to find other mechanisms to address issues and overlaps that can arise. So in those instances, you may identify, like with the National Credit Act there, you have to come up with other approaches to address practical issues that arise. But these are the acts that we can clearly and legitimately fully regulate, and that these authorities will fully have responsibility to be implementing. And so that's why they're specifically included in the schedule.
Why did you raise it in the first place, Roy?
To highlight that it came up a lot in comments. That's all I wanted to.
Okay.
I think we've dealt
with it. All right, so yeah, we've dealt with it. We will in our report draw attention to these issues. We've said, and we will show it to both DTI and Antonio, just for them to comment on it. Ultimately, it's Parliament that will decide, but at least we will reflect the views of the two departments accurately and then say what we think as a committee. Good. So on Schedule 1, can I take it we're adopting this? Mr. Topham will follow up on his matter, and in version 3 he might want to comment further. Okay, on the Schedule 2, again here, I couldn't see anything particularly.
No.
Yes, Mr. Topham, you do.
This is a question. The Road Accident Fund Act, the financial supervision, is that currently with the Reserve Bank? Because this seems to be weird to be thrown here.
FSB.
It is necessary, while it is currently under the responsibility of the Financial Services Board, the particular skills requirements that are necessary to properly administer that act are actually going to end up being transferred to the Prudential Authority. And so that is why it's necessary to indicate going forward that will be a responsibility for the Prudential Authority.
Shall we move on then to Schedule 3? Any comments here from industry? No. They can speak for themselves if you omit to mention what they said, right? They're here, most of them, well, the key people. On Schedule 3, I couldn't see anything either. I don't know what is missing here that should be here. Anybody got anything to say? No. Good. Then Schedule 3 is adopted, right? Now on Schedule 4, we start looking at the latest text you've given us, right? So can we start on the contested issues, where civil society, just draw us to the page number of the matrix.
Chair, I actually want to start with the easier stuff quickly. If you give me 5 minutes to explain the easy part.
Okay, the ones that we can adopt here. I thought of that approach, but then it might bog us down. With a guy like Mr. Topham here, it can happen.
Yeah.
But fine.
Okay, so in the current world, we have a Banks Act and a Mutual Banks Act, and the Banks Act says that the registrar of banks is a person in the Office of Banks, and says the Office of Banks is inside the Reserve Bank. If you then go across to, let's take the pension funds.
You know, sitting here, my neck and so on. Where is it?
I've got it.
There it is. Oh, right. We've got a text, colleagues. I didn't know.
Text, but there's actually, I'm talking about the diagram, just the two-pager
that
you've got.
Where's that?
No, here it is.
We're looking at this.
Yeah.
Good. Get what it is. We've got the text.
So hundreds of pages of a schedule are all suitably summarized on this little two pages. Are we going to go through this?
Vote on this advocate, Jenkins, and we're done.
See, what happens is I draw diagrams and the drafters then prepare hundreds of pages. So the Pension Funds Act, Section 2 of the Pension Funds Act currently states the registrar of pension funds will be the executive officer of the Financial Services Board, and the deputy registrar of pension funds will be the deputy executive officer of the Financial Services Board. So we're obviously getting rid of the executive officer and the deputy executive officer, and we're replacing them with the authority. And so what we need to do is we need to amend Section 2 of the Pension Funds Act, and we need to say that Nowadays, and that's all on the bottom slide if we page on, nowadays the Pension Funds Act will be administered by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. Yeah, it's the bottom slide on the one they've got. Yeah. That's the bottom one. Yeah. So, Chair, if we go to the schedules, you'll see that there we've got Act number 24 of 1956, the Pension Funds Act. And then we say the amendment of Section 1 is, firstly, we have to put in the definitions of the authority, which is the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. We have to refer to all the conduct standards. We have to refer to the Financial Sector Regulation Act, joint standards, prudential standards, and the register that we've discussed. And then we need to refer to the tribunal. And then we need to explain how the Pension Funds Act and the Financial Sector Regulation Act interact with one another. So we have to say that a reference to this act to the Registrar of the Financial Services Board is a reference to the authority. The powers, the duties of the authority are in addition to those of the financial regulation. A reference to blah, blah, blah. We're just basically explaining how the two acts, how the Pension Funds Act fits into to the system. Then on the next page, we say regulatory instruments are the regulatory instruments as in the Financial Sector Regulation Bill. And then we then repeal sections which refer to the Financial Stability Board. And we then just basically replace, every time you see registrar, we replace it with authority. And that goes on and on and on for pages and pages. So every time you see authority, please bear in mind, registrar of pension funds, please bear in mind it's now the etc. etc. That chair takes us pages ahead. And then we get to the Friendly Societies Act on page.
We go through all 11 acts.
And, yeah. And what do we do? Yeah, sorry, they're on page numbers. Apologies. Very unfair. Then, Friendly Societies Act, Act 25 of 1956, it's authority.
Hang on, calm down.
Yeah.
So basically, you set out for us this format and this diagram,
yeah,
right? Of course, you were digging at your colleagues to draft this thing, but
yes,
they will sort you out after this.
I know.
Now, up to the, because I have to chair in a way that's consistent with our oversight,
yeah,
role, right? Now, I'm listening to the road. So, colleagues, I don't know why this thing's not numbered, but anyway, we are stuck here. Up to Act number 25 of 1956. Remember, the Jenkins process will apply its mind, and the CIFISA process will be finished, and they'll give it to the Jenkins process as well. So we still got a bit of latitude to come back to these things. But from what I can see, up to Act number 25 of 1956, are there any comments, Mr. Topham? Mr. Topham is not raising a question, so really, at this stage, I don't know who dared to raise any questions on this matter. Right. So then I'm saying we adopt it until otherwise. So we're entering version 3 now.
Hmm.
Right, so it's okay for version 2. Fine. Okay, then can you help us now from Act number 25 of 56?
Okay, so Act number 25 of 56, also one of our oldest acts, my favorite type of financial institution, it is a friendly society. And we still have friendly societies. We do. And they sound lovely. I don't know, how many do we have? Quite a few friendly societies. Yeah.
So there's still quite a few out there.
I don't see that name anywhere.
I haven't seen that anywhere for years. Fine, let's go for it.
Right. So friendly society, similar. We say that the authority is the FSCA, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, the conduct standards.
It's a similar thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, really, do you want an explanation for this? It's really for CIFISA and Jenkins and so on to check that everything is in order. But as for the policy issues, I can't see that you have to go through everything. So that takes us to where?
That takes us to Act 90 of 1989, the Reserve Bank Act. This is exciting.
Don't be facetious.
I'm excited, but not.
Yeah, don't be facetious.
You
heard that this thing has the same legislative weight as anything else, right?
Oh, should we just skip the Reserve Bank Act, because that one's different, and we just do the other ones that are the same.
Fine.
So the Banks Act, that's Act 94 of 1990.
Now just tell me where we are. Friendly Societies Act of 1956.
Yes.
Takes us to, man, this is most irritating once again,
yeah.
To a certain page number. Colleagues, I'm sorry about this.
Unpaid.
To Act 90 of 1989.
Yes.
So that now, is there any question or comment, colleagues? You will have the entire constituency period, Tandi, to check all this out with your children and grandchildren. Then you can come back to us.
No, it's good.
Fine.
Okay.
Remember, if industry can speak here, there's nothing preventing Nombulela from speaking here. Mozambique, okay? I mean, she's entitled to speak here. Right. So South African Reserve Bank, what are we saying about this?
Okay, this one is different from the others.
Yeah.
There is a list of responsibilities of the Reserve Bank, and in one, we actually saying one of the additional responsibilities is that the bank is responsible for protecting and maintaining financial stability as envisaged in the Financial Sector Regulation Act. So we're just adding that as a responsibility of the Reserve Bank. Then we're saying in two that the bank must implement the Financial Sector Regulation Act and the Financial Sector Laws, because they really do the Banks Act and the Mutual Banks Act. We're just aligning all their inspection powers. So they currently have inspection powers under the Inspection of the Financial Institutions Act, and we're saying that must all be done by the Financial Sector Regulation Act. Similarly for 9, and that deals with the Reserve Bank Act.
Questions here, colleagues? Nope, we're fine with that, thank you.
Okay. Banks Act, Act 94 of 1990, there you go, it's just the authority in this case is the Prudential Authority. So it's the authority means the Prudential Authority established in Section 32 of Financial Regulation Act, but then the rest is very much the same as what we've had before. It just says relationship between the
So you've just done it consequentially, right?
Yeah.
And there's no ability we have in this committee to be able to check you've done it in every instance, right?
Yes.
It'll be a subcommittee process, okay? Well, it's not Sekiso's baby, as it were. He's just to oversee that it happens. Can't expect him to sit throughout the two-week period and go through it. I'm not expecting that. Just to oversee it with the assistance of the staff. Good. So can we move on, please?
This one's quite extensive. We also make some changes to where the governor has a role and the minister has a role in terms of the way different things take place, because currently certain things are given to the governor and certain things are given to the minister, but we need to correct all those things throughout. So you'll see that we've changed some of those things.
At this juncture, you know, industry, you employed lawyers and so on, and you went through all of this, right? And is there anything you pick up that's an anomaly or anything so far that is in the matrix that we haven't picked up on? Rosemary?
Mr. Chair, there's nothing that we have picked up that there are any issues with.
Is in monopoly capitalism, BASA?
We're fine with the provisions, we've been through it and we've consulted adequately. We have people.
You've consulted lawyers and you've checked and so on.
We've consulted National Treasury and our own internal process.
Yeah, you did. Now I'm saying because it buttresses, you know, our confidence that what is here is correct. Never mind our class differences and so on.
Chair, the schedules are amongst the oldest parts of the bill.
So they've had a long time. No, that helps a bit because, you know, obviously we have limited expertise here.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
But they actually have in the process, to be fair to them, they have made very helpful comments. Sometimes we had cross-references wrong and so we fixed those.
Yeah, they've been helpful.
We've had lots of those.
Very rare for monopoly capital to be helpful
very
to
helpful.
National Democratic Parliament. But there we are.
Right.
Just a quick one.
Yeah.
I want to see some with you.
Sorry, you want to?
See some with you.
Sorry?
See if I'm with you
on
this exercise. I know you said it's a special
process. Yes.
But the whole process, I'll give page 1 as an example.
Yeah.
Of the schedule.
Yeah.
Just page 1, because the other pages I can't name.
Yeah.
If this exercise is about making sure that we realign the previous act or conform, for lack of a better word, with the new Twin Peaks,
I will use an example of Pension Funds Act of
1956. Yep.
We had an exercise of pension reform. Where is it?
You mean the bill that came here and we passed in February,
then
March?
Then Kosatu-Fort, and then... Was it the one? Yeah.
Yeah. But if I understand this correctly, this is dealing not with the policy issues.
Okay.
It's dealing with what you said at the outset, aligning... You see, you remember, maybe you're not here, but you remember they said that once we do the bill, it has consequential amendments for a variety of other existing acts, right? Now, they couldn't put it in the bill, otherwise the bill gets too long. They put it in the schedule. So let's understand this piece of approach. Look at the question. We had said that, as listening to Advocate Jenkins also, we cannot shrug our responsibility. We said we will continue as much as we can. We will deal mainly with the contested issues, right? Because then Sipiso's committee needs a framework within which it must deal with the contested issues. But what happened is Roy said a lot of the issues are not contested and he's dealing quickly with that. Am I right, Roy?
Yeah.
So that means it's faster when we come back.
Yeah.
But we can't mandate Sipiso's committee to go from here without us dealing with the contested issues to guide him. So I hope that while you're going through the easier ones, you're giving enough time for the contested ones. Yeah, because it's worrying me. I thought you're going to take a few things. Yes, Makosi.
I can do that.
You know, Chair, I would be very careful about it, using phrases such as not contested, because it depends who is contesting what.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if you are going to go on this Friendly Societies Act, I can tell you, the working class of South Africa, they just feel suffocated by the major financial institutions, because they are the ones that seem to be having a say mostly on how, you know, on the reforms of the financial services sector. And if you get to know, the reality is that post-1994, the biggest thing that has happened in South Africa is that we have almost wiped up the friendly societies. There are very, very few left. Very, very few left. And in black communities, those were the societies that sustained most communities. So I'm saying we need to be very careful about this thing of, you know, contested or not contested, because I would imagine that we are talking about those that approach us or those that we approach, because we think they are the most affected. And judging by the number of people that have been coming before us to make comments, most of the time, those people that are marginalized by this very legislation, they never come here, either because they're not really aware of it or they don't understand the implications of that.
Page, as you recall, I've repeatedly raised this. That actually, we even, as you know, I've reported when Sipiso raised these things also. To be fair to Alan and me, we don't report you on everything. We've made every effort to get people to come here. You will recall we even had a special sitting. We targeted Black Sash. We asked COSATU to contact these NGOs. We tried the cooperative banks. I'm just saying, it makes sense. And some of their federal structures, I don't know to what extent they have a mandate, right? Sorry?
Sometimes if we are going to be serious about getting them involved, especially when you're talking about friendly societies, we have to go, unfortunately, to the communities and not to be here in Parliament. Because
I'm
unfortunately, they're not going to come.
All right, we can do that. No problem. When will we go? We can arrange that. Can you try to arrange something? We can do a study tour or something. Can you give us a list of names? We can do that. I don't have a problem. We did that with other bills. The difficulty is that we have also, you know, just to alert you to this, previously what we used to do was we would pay for civil society stakeholders to come, just to alert you. If you look at the municipal legislation, we often paid for remote organizations in rural areas and so on to come to Cape Town. But in around 2006, 2007, just to alert you, Parliament decided to stop that. And then I got moved to public enterprises where we engaged mostly with the unions and with capital. There were very few NGOs in the area that we worked in. So, you know, and then I was out of there. But I don't have any difficulties with this. Personally, you will see here, we have decided to address the issues under F of financial inclusion, transformation, and monopolization in the banking sector. So I'm guided by the majority. If we want now to go and visit the friendly societies or arrange some sort of telecommunication with them, then something we must do. Now, can people make some concrete proposals in that regard? In respect of the issue of contested, we agreed that the sense in which we are using it is the sense A, in which people have made submissions, whether it's what Center for Applied Legal Studies or COSATU or SACP and so on. I've noticed, I looked at the COSATU submission yesterday. Here it is, here. Just to alert you, I'm doing my homework. And members should also do their homework. That's what I'm looking at carefully. This is what I hope to have seen late at night last night, but I didn't have the time because I had other responsibilities that meant I got home at about 10 to 10 last night. So that's there before me. I'm going through that stuff. And I will do it over the constituency period to check. So basically what I'm saying is, if it's the view of the members, even at this late stage, that we consult with the friendly societies, then we have to find a way of doing it. So how do you want to do it, and when do you want to do it? One option may be Thursday, actually, if people are available. Because when we come back, just look at the program. We have got the BRRR process. Then we've got, I mean, we've got no choice, MTBPS. So you've got about 3 weeks, 2 weeks left there. So I would suggest if we can do it on Thursday, I'm free. We can postpone the CIFISA process and let's visit the friendly societies. Can it be done? How would we connect with the friendly societies? Personally, I don't see that thing much like I used to before. So I thought they got incorporated into the cooperative banks and that sort of thing. Where are the friendly societies? Let us know what you know.
Yeah, Chair, I mean, I think you were quite right in the beginning when you said, you know, we're not amending the Friendly Societies Act. And I think it would actually be quite useful if maybe as part of phase two we could look at how we can make friendly societies friendlier. We have actually made some proposals to make cooperative banks easier, which we'll get to when we get there. But I don't know what the process would be. How would we go about meeting friendly societies?
Can I get some clarity before getting... Yeah. Am I right that what we are doing here is we are not changing the content of the legislation that applies to Friendly Societies Act? So if this committee, Makosi, if this committee has agreed to the proposals, yeah, we must take responsibility. We can't blame industry or the executive. We must take responsibility. We have agreed to this thing. We spent hours and hours on this bill. Now, as I understand it, all that's happening here is that we are doing the consequential amendments. If this is what the committee has agreed to, therefore, you will amend the schedule as a consequence of what the committee has agreed to. So really, this is not about the executive. This is about us. So what members can do, if they can by Monday show us what clauses that are here in the Friendly Society section or any other section of the schedules that alter the content of that legislation, then we can, maybe we can go for a day or something in the constituency period next week and go and visit the friendly societies, or we can connect with them in some way. But we must take responsibility. This bill is in Parliament. We have adopted these changes. We made many, many changes. The bill has been significantly rewritten on our intervention. So we should be careful about lumping the responsibility we have as MPs to the executive at this stage. We must do what we want to do. So if that's the view, there's a possibility of Thursday we can connect with them in some way. or early next week we can visit them, or we can arrange for a set of MPs to visit them, but we will take a member of the executive there, meaning a representative of the department there, and explain what we are doing. So, can I be guided by the committee? What do you want to do? Over to you. What has just been said?
Chair, I hear Comrade Makhosi. As I'm saying, as I'm listening to the inputs here, is more of the alignment of what we have done with the FSR bill, with the other acts, so that they talk to each other. When it comes to the amendment of the particular acts, the substantive amendments to the particular acts, then it's a, I think there's the process that you can get into of visiting the communities and so on. As things stand now, you just want to make sure that there is an alignment between the acts, the FSR bill and the acts which are referred to in the schedules.
I don't want to say any, offer any guidance here. What do we do? Can we come back to this tomorrow, Makhosi? Think more about it and come back with a proposal. What I want to say though, Makhosi, if you're expressing an existential frustration with the extent to which the big powers, you see, if you look at something else I've raised in this parliament, those of you who are familiar with my thinking, often get defeated on this. Everybody says yes and nothing happens. You see, even COSATU, it does not, well, in its heyday, before 2009 when I was chairing it, it did not represent the whole of the proletariat, still less now. I complained repeatedly that who comes here is big capital and big labor. What about marginalized workers? Right? So they said, fine, we can fund it and so on. As I told you, Makhosi, we've raised this battle. Tandi might be familiar. Parliament does not have a budget for this sort of thing. And we should, there's a Lefotla of the ANC coming up. Can people please raise these things? Because I would like to raise them. But Makhosi, I've raised this thing for years. And you know, people just bored with me, right? Those who are here for many years. Remember, Jackson Mtembu's been here since 94. He was in the other house. He's heard me say these things. So please raise these things. I think what you're saying is very important. Let me tell you, my own ideological predisposition, as you can imagine, Makhosi, and the direction this bill is taking, there are issues, but I'm not here in that capacity. I'm here as an ANC MP. I'm guided by ANC policies. And the chair of the committee, I must take everybody into account and finally rule. But if you are expressing an existential frustration, believe you me, my sister, there's no difference between you and me. It's not about this issue. It's also when you deal with that pension bill. Who actually comes here? So you're dealing with a broader issue. That wonderful, wonderful parliament we had here for the first 5 to 6 years, where 2 a.m. you could be walking with the Constitutional Assembly. It happened to me. 2 a.m. I went home one day. And I went past, it was very moving, Makhosi, for people of my generation. It was about 3 a.m, I remember. I wrote about it somewhere. I went past that old Assembly chamber, and I popped in there. And you had Ramaphosa and Ruth Mayer sitting there early hours of the morning. I was so moved. And in the corridor, there were people walking up and down. There's a wonderful image I have of an Indebele woman. It was captured in the newspapers, amazing. I'm not a photographer. Wearing this wonderful outfit, right, and using a cell phone. Right? And let me tell you, in this parliament, Tandi wasn't here then. Who's here since 94? In the early hours of the morning, civil society was walking up and down. So it's up my street. On that issue, by the way, I feel very strongly about the monopolization of the industry. And tomorrow, Makhosi, I really want, given your experience, you have a lot of credibility, because you won't be seen as ideologically driven like I'm supposed to be in this issue. You have the experience. And you also chair SCOPA, which gives you a lot of other experience. Look at this section on financial inclusion, transformation, monopolization of the banking sector. Talk about your own experiences in the bank. I hope you are listening, Basa. This thing of the banks having more than 90%, 4 of you, in this day and age, given even the most conservative person in the National Democratic Movement being opposed to monopolization, is really wrong. So, Makhosi, don't apologize for raising it. You are saying something that I feel very strongly about. But hey, it's not germane directly to this issue of the consequential amendments. And let's look at a way of consulting them. But it can't be a meaningless consult. It has to be about more than just this thing. Where I like what you're responding to, Roy, is you're saying in phase 2 we need to look at these issues. And Momo, we want to alert you. Tomorrow, this thing about no, transformation doesn't belong here, and you know, all that stuff. We must fight with you on these things. Momo, forget it. I like what your deputy minister said. If we don't do these things now, tomorrow it's going to happen, and we're not going to be in charge. So, Makosi, fine, I agree with you. Let's think about a practical thing. I also agree with Sifiso. I think both those things are not mutually exclusive. And remember, when we're talking about contested, we are asking, A, civil, well, the industry. Let's not be delusional. Right? The civil society was very minimal here. It's mainly the industry. I have contacted Makosi, just to tell you, after I've contacted four organizations. I've found them. I've asked them to come here. Kosatu is sitting here down the road. Where are they? Opposite the street here. They don't have the capacity to come, right? FEDUSA, I spoke to somebody in at the airport, right? I said, do you guys want to come? They're not interested, right? Not interested. They don't have the capacity. And they feel it's fine, the bill. I am disappointed, quite frankly, that so many people are fine with this bill. No, no, no. She touched a chord here. And she provoked me. So, hey, blame Makosi for my response. Right. Makosi, I'm with you. Right. I entirely agree with you. Except that I also agree with Sifiso, and I'm sure you do too. But nothing wrong with getting existentially fired up. I hope the banks are listening, in particular in Asisa. 5 years from now, we don't do certain things, and with your cooperation and your active, proactive participation, you're going to confront, and we all are, this parliament, the social explosions that are going to break out, if they're not already breaking out. And before anybody has any illusions about them taking over, they're not going to take over in 2019, but it's possible later down the road somebody else might take over, not them. Whoever is facing this, whoever is running the government will face the same issues. This is the same country. These are the same challenges, the same huge inequalities. And those who want to take over must ask themselves how much they have contributed with their policies. But leave that aside. Makosi, you've really provoked me. Right. No, in a positive way. Fine, I've had my say. No, I agree with that. Fine, let's go on. And I think Treasury also needs a lesson. I want to tell you, I spoke to a Treasury official the other day. I know you're looking at your watch. I don't care, Makosi. You're stuck with me. Listen here. This thing, I want to raise something with you now. No, you're leaving at 4:45. Oh, please, right. 4:45, you are leaving. You will leave at 4:45. Right, go on, please. Okay. You raise the point, Makosi. Don't run away. You've got 2 more minutes. Come on, we can do a lot in 2 minutes.
Quite a lot in 2 moments. Financial Services Support Act 97 and 1990, we repeal it.
Yeah, that's straightforward, right, Makosi? Any issues? Should we consult, what is this now? Financial Services Board, you here. So you've been consulted.
Okay. So they're disappearing. The Financial Supervision...
Road Accident Fund, you're going to have a public hearings with them?
No.
Well, of course, what do you say? I'm being facetious. Okay, I withdraw that. No. I withdraw that. I'm being very rude and naughty and irrelevant. Right, Financial Supervision Road Accident Fund. Explain, please, quickly.
That is what Janine said. It goes to the Prudential Authority. So the authority there is the Prudential Authority.
Right. Okay, can we end on this note that I'm feeling a bit nervous about what you're doing? What you're doing is you're going sequentially through it, right?
Yeah.
Are you sufficiently allocating the limited time we have to the contest?
I would prefer to, if we start tomorrow, to rather go to the contention.
Yes, please. That's what
because
we asked you to do.
I've just tried to give you a flavor.
Right. So can we end here? And can I quickly remind members, one is we deal with the pension fund reform thing, the same thing you raised, Pinky. Right? Two, that this is where we need the whole team here, please. Because I really must tell you, from the point of chairing this committee, I'm finding the tax amendments this time around extremely challenging and too many. So can the entire team be here, please? I'm not jittery, I just want to do the job properly. They'll be moving to the Twin Peaks bill, and Makosi, don't you worry, at 4:45 promptly, you can stand up and leave, if I'm not done. Sifiso, I feel sorry for you for the next few days, but hey, you know what, you'll survive. Good. What's that, Tali? No, we're going to substantially finish tomorrow. Good. Thank you very much. Anybody got any process issues about tomorrow? Nope. Thank you. Bye. We finished exactly 15 seconds early. Makosi, 15 seconds. Look at my watch. Thank you. Bye.
Chair, what time do we start tomorrow?
Exactly time we said in the program, 10 o'clock.
For us?
You guys. No, you have to sit here. I would say given our at most for pensions, I think tax will take us still about two and a half hours, Mr. Momaniat. So say 2 hours. Can you be here around 12:30, just to be safe? Thank you. Good. Thank you, everybody. It's a response document from Treasury. Can you please study it tonight?